excited to have on the show Liam Draxel. He played number one for University of Kentucky this last year. He was the ITA National Player of the Year, as well as finishing the year ranked number one in college tennis. Let's see, he just won the Lexington Challenger doubles with Stefan Kozlov, and as a junior, he was as ranked as high as number nine in the ITF junior rankings. So if I got that all right, Liam, could you give us a little bit of your background on how you sort of got into tennis and your family and how they might have brought you into it?
Yeah, for sure. First of all, thanks for having me, guys. It's a pleasure to be here. I started getting into tennis. Well, you know, tennis runs in my family. Both my parents played. My dad, he's the head tennis pro at my club in Canada in Newmarket. So I guess it was my dad who kind of brought me into the game. Like ever since I was born, I was around the tennis club, and ever since, you know, I could start walking, I was probably, you know, swinging and swiping away at a ball at a very young age.
And your dad's tennis background, did he play college tennis?
Yeah, he actually did. He played for University of Toledo. It's in Ohio.
Okay, Toledo. Nice.
Yeah.
And then, you know, so being sort of immersed in the game from birth, you know, how did you sort of progress through the juniors? Like how was your game when you were in the 12s and the 14s? And, you know, obviously by the time you're in the, you know, 16s and 18s, you're, you know, one of the top 10 players in the world as a junior. But tell us a little bit about your game when you were 12 and 14.
Oh, I was a huge pusher under 12. Let me tell you, I was a moon baller. I'll admit I was a huge pusher.
Love it.
But yeah, I won under 12 nationals when I was 11. So that was a fun memory. That was my first singles national title. So I was pretty good from a young age. I was always so competitive. I think that's why I probably had success early on. I was such a competitor even when I was when I was younger. So I was a little pusher, and I just competed my butt off all the time. And then I just slowly, you know, started playing a little more aggressive as I got older and started, you know, playing players who, you know, hit a bigger ball and have a little bit of bigger weapons. But yeah, I was super competitive. I'd always say I was pretty good. Like I was very good in my province and in Canada, but I'm being a little picky, but I wasn't great like internationally. I remember like one of my bigger results is that I made the quarterfinals of under 14 Orange Bowl. That was a little bit unexpected. Mm-hmm. I had a good run there, and that was kind of the first outstanding international result I had. So I was good within Canada, but wasn't great internationally, just because I don't think that tennis in Canada at a young age, you know, we don't have the depth that like America or Europe would have.
Right. You know, it's funny that you said that you're a moonball pusher. You know, you just played Tommy Paul. We talked to his coach, and that's how he described Tommy when he was with that same age, that Tommy mm-hmm. was a moonball when he was the pusher. But mm-hmm. obviously, you know, your games have developed. So, you know, you're in good company with that.
Yeah. It's funny.
Yeah.
Yeah. So as I look at your bio on the University of Kentucky website, one of the things that it says is that you went to Laurel Springs School. Talk about online school and what that was like, and what grade did you start going to Laurel Springs?
I started doing Laurel Springs in grade 10, and then I graduated from high school, all Laurel Springs. I just think I had
to Liam do, just before we get there. So in Canada, is grade 10 is that similar to our 10th?
Sophomore year.
Okay.
And senior year of high school.
Gotcha.
I was in Laurel Springs. Yeah.
Okay. So you were 3 years. So I guess what Scott's asking is, in Canada, is it any different? Do you go all the way through a senior year, or is it after a junior year you graduate? How's that work in Canada? Same as America?
Yeah. There's four years in high school.
Okay. Okay. So it's the same.
It's the same. Yeah. So I did my last 3 years of high school in Laurel Springs. And I started playing more ITF, so I was traveling a little bit more. So I had to do an online school. So I picked Laurel Springs. I think it was affiliated. I went to Saddlebrook in Tampa, and I think they were just affiliated with Laurel Springs. So I just got signed up through the academy. That's what they recommended to me. And, you know, I thought it was great. I thought, you know, it was, you know, sometimes it can be complicated learning online, but they made it simple. Like the website was easy to navigate and you could learn pretty easily. And they gave a bunch of help if you needed it. So I honestly think it was really good. Like I heard people doing Florida virtual and it didn't sound as good as Lowell Springs, to be honest. So I'm happy with my choice. And I enjoyed it.
Yeah, good. Yeah, and I know they've had a lot of success. If you look at Stanford's roster, half their team has gone to Laurel Springs. So you know, you can get a good education, and obviously you can, you know,
online. That's right.
Make it work for the tennis as well.
So tell me this: is as you were making that decision, do you wish you'd have done that sooner?
To go online.
To go online and go, because it sounds like the online decision corresponded with moving to that academy.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah.
Do you wish you'd have done that sooner?
I mean, you could say like I could have moved there like when I was like under 12 or something like that. But you know, I think it was nice to at least finish elementary school. You know, as a regular student, I think it's kind of important to have balance in life. So no, I don't wish I would have went sooner. I think I kind of went at a good time. I think it was kind of right after under 14 for me. That's when I moved to Florida and I started playing, you know, players in the academy who were a tough challenge. And I started playing ITFs and played more international tournaments. So I think I timed it, you know, pretty well. Yeah.
Yeah.
Would you have even done it a year earlier? Or do you think it had made any difference in your ending results having done it any earlier?
I'd say going online starting in high school would be the same result. But I also think, you know, if I the way my dad he's been my coach pretty much my whole life. He's played a big role in my tennis. The way I was brought up, it's very different from a lot of other players my level. I played at a community tennis club. When I was like 8 years old, I was playing like 70-year-olds in singles, you know, like I had a huge like mixed mash of tennis. Like I played, you know, elderly people. I played, you know, kind of club players. I was thrown into like different doubles leagues with adults that I didn't even really know. Yeah. It wasn't like structured training, I guess. It was, you know, I kind of picked up the game by just feel. I feel like that's why I have a good feel for the court now, because I feel like sometimes when you go into an academy and you have structured training at such a young age, like you can hit the ball great and have great technique, but you don't know a lot of strategy, or you don't know, you know, the feel for the game, or you might not have a good net game, or, you know, something like that. I feel like the way, you know, I was practicing when I was younger, it was a lot more in a relaxed environment, and I played just for the enjoyment, you know? I think that was a big part. I think that's what, like, kind of the way I play now, that kind of goes to show. It kind of just relates to how I was practicing when I was younger.
Yeah, that's really interesting, because, you know, a name you'll probably recognize, Eric Quigley, who also played at Kentucky.
He had
a very similar background. You know, his mom worked in a club and he would just hit with anybody, whether it's a 70-year-old man or an 80-year-old woman or whoever he needed to, you know, hit with, or fast feeds or whatever. And so, you know, he had a great feel for the game, and, you know, it's hard to develop that in a structured, you know, environment. And, you know, we talk about, you know, you hear some in the juniors, you hear, you know, that kid hits an academy ball, you know, sort of the same thing, high and heavy, you know, it's repetitive and everything. But then you have guys like yourself that are more, have a little bit more guile and a little bit more finesse. They can work the court a little bit better because they've just been trained a little bit different. So that's interesting. I like that. So, you know, there's been a lot of success. You mentioned that that Canadian tennis is not as deep as, say, American tennis. But if you look at, you know, where the Canadians are, you know, at the highest levels, they're above the Americans at the highest levels. You know, how it is there some sort of I know people talk about the Canadian Federation, but how is the Canadian Federation instrumental in your development, if at all?
Yeah. They, Tennis Canada, they've been very helpful for me throughout my career. Honestly, they've helped me out a ton. Whether is I've you know, done a couple training camps there, or when I was playing ITFs, I would travel with their coach and the Tennis Canada players who train there full time, and they've given me a bunch of wild cards into challengers and stuff like that. So they've helped me out a lot. They have played a big part of my career.
Yeah. And so do they have like a training center where, like, so the USTA used to have a training center where, you know, like Riley and Tommy and guys would go and train full time. Was it more or less they would come in and they would, you know, you bring in a camp for a week or a weekend, and then you go back to your home and you just implement that?
Yeah. The Tennis Canada Federation, it's in Montreal, Canada, and they had a bunch of players training there, but I was just happy at Saddlebrook. I didn't want to change anything. It was working out for me. I thought I was improving and getting better, so I didn't feel the need to change anything. So I was happy in Florida. But yes, there were players who trained at the center in Montreal. Yep.
Yeah, and to their credit, you know, even though you weren't, say, training there full time, they didn't like exclude you from the group. You know,
it wasn't exactly. Like,
So that's good. Mm-hmm.
All right, so I feel the need to share my screen and show a video, okay?
All right, okay.
Scott took this on his phone, and for the folks that are listening, they're not going to be able to see it.
I go on my phone and actually watch this. It gets me pumped up just watching it. I love this video. Such a good video you took. Okay. I love it. I'll watch it.
So it's 30 seconds. Let's watch it together. And I'm wondering – on Zoom, if the people watching can watch Liam's face as we watch it. I don't know. Yeah, we'll find out when we record, but here we go. So here's what I want to know. Why is tennis not more like this all the time? Right?
I don't know. That's a good question.
I mean, that right there, just watching it, does it not give you a little bit of chill bumps watching? I mean, that is awesome watching it.
Yeah, it does. It makes you want to play a dual match tomorrow.
So that inspiration, why do we not do that more? Why have we lost that in tennis?
I don't know. It's got to be your personality. It's got to come naturally to you. Yeah. And it just comes naturally to me, you know, like I don't plan that. Like I don't like try to have a huge celebration. Like it just comes out of me. It just happens naturally. So I just think, it just has to come from you, and it has to be just your personality. You can't really explain it. It's just got to happen out there. I don't know.
But what's great is in a college dual environment, you know, the crowd is expected to be loud. They're expected to be, you know, partisan, you know, and then, you know, a couple weeks ago, you're there in Lexington at the Challenger, you know, there was sort of a college environment for your match because you were a player there, and, you know, there, you got some crowd support, but for every other match, there was like, it was like, if you clapped, you felt awkward, you know, it was like, oh my gosh, you know, I broke the silence, you know, I feel terrible, but you know, it just felt weird. But you know, it's like when you played Brooksby, you know, there was a lot of people there, and your teammates were there. And so, you know, you were pumped up, you know, from the very first point, you know, you were, you know, doing the come ons and let's goes. And it was really, you know, you're really energetic. But, you know, then you just played, you know, Tommy last weekend or yesterday or Saturday or whatever. And Toronto, and there are no crowds. How did you deal with that?
Yeah, well, I think for sure, whether it's crowd energy or my opponent getting pumped up or cheating me or something like that, it definitely helps me play better. So I think, you know, like a no crowd kind of silent environment, it's it's a little bit boring for me almost. Yeah. So yeah. I like the chaos, put it that way. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. For sure.
And so have you ever had anybody that's like, hey man, like tone it down a little, why don't you tone it down a little?
Oh yeah. I mean, yeah, that happens a lot.
And so, what do you even say? Because I'm sitting here saying before we even started recording, like, don't tone it down. I like it. Why do you think they want you? What is in there inside their heart making them say that?
Well, if they lost, they're going to say that first of all. If they're losing, they'll say that.
Hold on. So you've had opponents tell you to tone it down?
Oh yeah, I thought that's what you're talking about. Yeah.
No. Yeah. I was thinking like the guy at the club or the ref or your coach. Yeah. You're telling me the guy you're playing saying tone it down.
Yeah, I've had it in the past. Yeah, but yeah, also like at clubs and stuff. Like, especially when I was younger, and I would like play like a practice match or something, and I'm like pulling out commands and stuff. The members would get a little bit annoyed, or like my coaches tell me to manage my energy a little bit. But yeah, I think if it helps you and makes you play better and makes you have solid results, then I don't see why not to do it.
Yeah, is that something that your dad encouraged? You know, he was a college player, you know, he grew up with tennis. Did he encourage you to be that, you know, vocal and that emotional? Or did he just say if that's your personality, just be who you are?
Yeah. Yeah. My dad, he always said, it's easier to tame a tiger than paint stripes on a pussycat.
Yeah, I like it. That makes sense.
And one of the things I think is, can you imagine if Alabama's giving somebody a butt whooping and the other team says, hey, can you get the crowd a little quieter, like they're bothering us? I just don't get that competitive spirit. If you're getting your butt whooped and you don't like how loud they're being, then be more competitive and they'll quiet down. Like, that's one thing when I played football, we always enjoyed, Scott played football too. I always enjoyed when we would play well and the opponent's crowd would get totally silent. Like, we would look around and we go, you hear that? And they'd be like, no. And I'm like, exactly. Right. Mm-hmm. I don't get you're competing, you're winning. And they're like, hey man, tone it down. I mean, that would make me want to yell more.
Yeah.
Sure. Well, hey, let's talk about a little bit how you got, you know, from Newmarket, Canada to Lexington, Kentucky. What was the recruiting process like and what other schools were you looking at?
Yeah, for sure. Well, Matt Gordon, the assistant coach at Kentucky, used to coach at Saddlebrook and used to be my coach for about 2 years. In my senior year of high school, that's when he took the job at Kentucky. And then he obviously started recruiting me. So I just had that comfortability. Mm-hmm. Having pretty much my own coach at a school was very nice. So that was probably the reason why I went to Kentucky. And then when I went on my visit, I saw the campus. I met the guys on the team. I met Cedric too. I love Cedric to death. Mainly because of Matt at first. And then once I visited and fell in love with the school. And then, you know, the rest is kind of history, but, I took my visits to, I visited Texas A&M and Michigan, and then obviously Kentucky.
Interesting. Cause you know, like I say, there's been a lot of successful Canadian players end up in North Carolina, you know, Gallardo at NC State, Sagan at UNC with Peck, but there wasn't any interest in the North Carolina schools.
Not really.
Fair.
And so what made you choose a school that's in Kentucky that's as cold as it is up there? Versus Texas or Texas A&M, where you're going to wear shorts and a t-shirt in January.
Yeah, that's the only downfall of Kentucky. I'm Canadian. I've been living in Florida, so I've gotten soft. So the Kentucky winters are actually pretty brutal on me. But I actually like playing college tennis indoors because it's louder. So I actually think the atmosphere gets there's more energy in the in an indoor facility than an outdoor facility.
Sure.
Just need to get two more courts at Lexington. Court setup is kind of a mess, but we'll work on that.
Yeah. You gotta love the second wave though when 5 and 6 go on. I like that.
That's good.
Especially if 5 and 6 go on and it's even, right? I mean, yeah, or like close.
2-3 or 3-2.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
But you've also, I'm not sure if it was a plan, but you know, there's also four other Canadians on the Kentucky team, you know, with Gab and Lapidat and a couple others. So was that, you guys know each other from before then? I'm sure you knew each other before then, but was there any sort of like cross recruiting? Hey, you know, now I'm going to commit to Kentucky. Why don't you come with me?
Yeah, kind of. Well, I think Gab was actually the first one to commit.
Mm-hmm.
He committed pretty early. And then I committed, and then LeBlanc committed, and then me, Gab, and LeBlanc were there freshman year, and then Lapidat took his visit my freshman fall, and then he committed, I think, on his visit. So that's kind of how it worked out.
Oh boy, I'm gonna go on mute. My dog. Someone just knocked on the door, and the dogs are barking.
So here's what I want to know. I want to know more about your academy experience and your decision to, I mean, you sound like you had a good experience when you were working with your dad, you were at a club. What made you make that jump to an academy?
Well, I just thought I needed better players to practice with. There wasn't a lot around where I'm from, just like a handful of players that could really challenge me in practice. So, and I actually already had a condo in Saddlebrook since I was about 7 or 8. So I was there for a while, and I would always jump in the academy when I went there for a couple weeks in the summer or during Christmas or something like that. So I was already comfortable at Saddlebrook, and so was my family. So it was an easy transition to move to Saddlebrook.
Yeah. So it was just natural.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. That makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Well, hey, let's talk a little bit about, you know, the past year you've had. You know, you had a great year. You know, I think this would be your sophomore year, the past year, and you have an opportunity, I think, to redo your freshman year. Any thoughts of redoing that, or are you just going to continue with your current class categorization or classification?
Sorry, what was the question?
Well, if I'm gonna I know that your freshman year was the COVID year.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. Right.
And so, is there any consideration to, you know, sort of use that as a fifth year, or are you just going to keep your current classification?
I'm just going to take it year by year and just see where my level's at. I don't know. I can't look too far in the future, so I don't really know. But I'm just going to play it by ear.
Yeah, well, with being the national player of the year, I guess, you know, that's a pretty high standard to meet. And so to come back next year as you know, the reigning national player of the year, you know, everyone knows who you are, everyone's going to be shooting for you, so that'll be really tough. But you've had a great summer. You know, you had the Futures in Weston where you made it to the finals, and that thing got, you know, kind of abandoned. Tell us a little bit about that tournament. I know that you had a lot of three set matches where you made opponents retire in the third set. Were you just grinding them down?
Yeah. Since the NCAA tournament, I just can't stop going three sets nowadays. I don't know what it is. But yeah, just, it was really hot. It was on clay, and you know, I was just grinding out there, and I did wear a couple of guys out in the third. They did retire from like cramping or something like that.
So is that more satisfying than actually, you know, winning the match, you know, 6-4 in the third, but when they retire, it's, you know, 4-1 down in the third, is it like, yeah, I made this guy surrender?
Yeah, you could say that. I mean, also winning 4, 5, 6 in the third is just as satisfying. But
he just wants to win.
I mean, if they retire just because, you know, they're cramping out or they're fatigued or they're done, I mean, it is satisfying just because, you know, I think just because I probably work harder, I'm fitter, I'm in better shape, I'm tougher. That's fun to win like that too.
Yeah. All right. So let me share this. So can you see this headline?
Yes.
It says, so the best player in NCAA tennis right now is a Canadian. Liam Draxel on life playing in the NCAA. So when you see a headline like that, how does it make you feel that somebody's saying the best player in college tennis right now is you.
That's a pretty good compliment.
Yeah, for sure.
There's a lot of good players in college tennis.
Yeah.
I think it's very strong right now, especially, you know, fifth years coming back. So it was very strong. I mean, the singles NCAA tournament was stacked. There were so many good players in it.
Yeah.
So that's a great achievement, obviously. So yeah, I'm just proud of myself, proud of that accomplishment. But you know, I really want an NCAA title. So, you know, there's always more to achieve and more to look forward to.
Yeah. And, you know, talking about, you know, your summer, you know, you just played the Lexington Challenger, where you played Jensen Brooksby, who just cracked into the top 100, played Tommy Paul, who's, you know, a top 50 player. What about their games that is different from the college level? What makes them a little bit, you know, what makes them tougher than maybe the college game?
Yeah, they just have more weapons. They hit the ball a little bit bigger, and they have more weapons, for sure. Like, when I'm playing in college against college guys, I feel like they win their points maybe off of my mistake or, you know, something that they did pretty good but not great. But when you play, you know, guys top 100 level, when they win their points, it's either – you know, off of like a service winner or like a huge forehand, you know, they're really going out there and winning their points and deserving them. So they're out there like playing the win. They're playing really aggressive. So I think that's kind of the difference, just a little bit of bigger weapons.
Yeah.
So give an example, when you say weapons, I mean, other than a big serve or a serve that you can hit hard in the spot you mean to hit it and a big forehand, What are you talking about? Like, they're able to get to the net and finish volleys? What other weapons are there?
Yeah, they just put a lot, like, they put pressure on you. You know, they take it early. Brooksby takes the ball incredibly early. And they have good, they place their shots well. And sometimes it's pretty noticeable. I play pretty defensive sometimes, and I can get away with it in college sometimes. But against those types of players, you can't get away with playing, playing defensive or hitting the ball short, because they'll eat you up if you do that.
Yeah, and that's the thing about Brooksby. He was so interesting to watch because his game was so unique. You know, he didn't blow you away with a serve or anything like that, but he was able to hit it in spots. You know, he was
good keeping
you guessing. And it was like, you know, against your match and against Kokkinakis, which I watched both those matches, you know, his serve was really effective, even though it wasn't, you know, 140 miles an hour. You know, it's just different. And, you know, we talk, you know, about weapons. You know, I think another weapon that we don't talk enough about is mindset. And that's something I think is probably one of your best weapons is mindset. You just have this refusal to lose is what I call it. And remember when you were playing Mississippi State in doubles, you guys were down 5-1, you and Millen were down 5-1.
Oh, that was crazy.
Yeah, exactly. And so, like, I think you hit a return that made it like 30-all when it was 5-1, and you just said to Millen, "We're not losing." And you guys won four straight games, got it back to 5-all, didn't finish, but you did not lose that match. And it was just one of those things where even you're down 5-1, down two breaks, you're just like, we're not losing, and we're going to do whatever it takes. And so, you know, maybe talk a little bit about the mindset as a weapon.
Yeah, for sure. Everyone hits good shots. They can hit the ball well. They can have pretty technique and a pretty game. But, you know, that's part of it. But, you know, a whole nother part of it is mental toughness and, you know, your tactics on court and your strategy. You're willing to adjust during a match, you know, if you can adapt to different environments. I think that's probably bigger. So I think, tennis is probably more of a mental game than, you know, probably people think. It's huge. I think being smart out there and having, you know, a good game plan and being strategic and playing the big points smart is really important. I think that's crucial. Playing the right way on the big points and you know, the key points in the match. I think that's huge.
Yeah.
And I like, you know, talking about what the top 100 players did to you. I mean, ultimately it's the same stuff Scott and I are teaching our own boys, right? Don't hit it short, hit it deep. Don't, you know, we're talking to him about hit your spots. When you get a short ball, make them pay for it. Don't play so defensive. Take the ball early, right? Mm-hmm. So you're basically saying that the better players, when you do those things, make you pay, where the, the players that aren't quite as good, you can get away with those mistakes and you're still okay.
Right, exactly.
And that you know, that's hard for a kid to understand because you know, they're playing and they're competing and they hit it short and the player they're playing doesn't make them pay. And they're like, well, it didn't matter. And so that's one of those things why it's important for them to find players that will make them pay so that they have to continue to improve. Would you agree?
Yeah. I totally agree. That's what I said pretty much.
I mean, when you were younger, you characterized yourself as a pusher. What got you to finally play a little more aggressive? It stopped working. Is that what it was?
That's a really good question. It's not like I started losing. It was obviously a part in my game where I really had to work on. And I think my dad knew that. So we just gradually, you know, we kept working at it and working at it. And I just think it was a gradual process. From a moon baller to, you know, a regular, you know, player who plays pretty aggressively. But I think it was just a gradual process that, you know, I just worked at it. And I just gradually, you know, played closer to the baseline. I, you know, gradually stopped moon balling, you know, stuff like that.
Yeah. But how did he convince you? Because one of the things that's hard is just with a player who's winning, is just to simply convince them that this is necessary.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Well, now that I think of it, I was number one in Canada under 12. And then I wasn't number one under 14. I wasn't, or under 16 too. There was a guy, Luka Vukovic. He was number one under 14. I lost him a couple times at nationals. Also Taha Badi, I lost to him under 16. So I was losing to some guys in Canada. So I guess a couple losses, you know, did make me realize without thinking consciously. So I guess not maybe being successful and, you know, winning nationals anymore in my country, maybe said, oh, hey, like maybe I do have to play a little bit more aggressive, you know, because, you know, you can't moonball forever.
Right.
That's right. And what
don't
was your
we
training?
All wish we could, right? Don't yeah, we all wish right. we could.
Just waiting, yeah. And what was your training like back then? You know, you said that your dad would work with you, but you know, I guess at this point you were still going to normal regular school. How much training were you getting in per day?
Like when I was under 12 or 14.
Yeah, 12 to 14, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think honestly when I started taking tennis here, like actually training, I was probably like 10. I think I was 10. Yeah. Yeah. Like I actually started, you know, doing more private lessons with my dad and we'd work on, you know, technique and fundamentals and stuff. Also, I worked with another coach in Toronto, Casey Curtis. And he worked a lot on my technique too. He's a great technical coach. He helped my technique out a lot. I'd play about 3 to 4 hours a day.
How did you make that work in a regular school setting?
Yeah,
you
know, I would go early morning for sure. Okay, I'd probably play with my dad like 7 to 8, something like that, for an hour in the morning. And then I would go after school, probably do like a clinic for 2 hours. Then another lesson with either my dad or Casey. So I guess, it was probably like around 4 hours.
Perfect. That sounds really good. And how difficult was it, you know, having your dad being so heavily involved in your development? Were there any sort of father-son, you know, arguments or just not listening to you? Or is it
he says so nonchalant. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, for sure. We're really good. We actually have a really good relationship. My dad's super laid back. And he never pushed me at all, really. He never forced anything on me. He never, you know, forced me to play tennis. You know, I think he made it a a big thing that it had to come from me. Like I wanted to go on court with my dad and, you know, work on my serve or something like that. So he was super chill and laid back. And I think that, that it worked out great because it just made me love the game and truly like coming from me as a person. So, and he gets it as a, he was a player. He gets it, you know, if I had a bad loss or if I was super negative that day, I was just having a bad day, he would get it. And just kind of be quiet and let me be almost. So he did the right things and he just knew not when to push and then when to push and actually, you know, try to coach and really help me. He had the perfect balance as a dad and as a coach.
Good. Well, at some point when he listens to this, that's a good compliment for dad, right? I mean, for you to say that, there's a lot of, you know, sons who their dads coach them in any sport. And at the end of it, that's the last thing they want to talk about. So he managed it well, if that's how you came out of it feeling.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I played in Tommy Paul and in the Rogers Cup, and I didn't serve well. And, you know, I was just like, hey dad, like, let's go out to the courts and let's hit a couple of serves. And, you know, it's just something as basic as that, you know, it just comes from me. I want his input and help on my serve. And we just go and work on it.
Good. Excellent. Well, hey, give us a little bit of your, projection for next year's team at Kentucky. Everyone's coming back except for Caesar. You've added a transfer from Ohio State that should shore up the bottom of the lineup. But given how well you guys did last year, you know, what are you guys thinking about for this year?
Yeah, I mean, I think we underperformed last year. I'm being honest. Lapidat was injured all year. His ankle was all messed up playing through an injury. That wasn't fun for him. You know, he was top 50 ICF. The guy can play. Yeah. So I think once he gets healthy, he's going to be a great, huge part of our team. And also Yasha, you know, it's tough, you know, when you come freshman year, he just started in January. College tennis is so different. I mean, everyone who plays, I think their freshman year is a bit of a struggle. So I think those two guys can really play and they can, you know, they can win a lot of matches for us this year. Mm-hmm. So that's going to be a huge help. Also, we got that transfer from Old Dominion. He played one.
Oh, right. Yeah.
He's already played 4 years of college tennis. So he's a college tennis vet. he'll be great. And also JJ from Ohio State. I saw him play in the summer a little bit when I was at the Challenger. And he's a good player, great player. He can play. He hits the ball well, and he's really good at doubles too. So he's a great ad.
It's gonna be tough for Cedric and Matt to come up with a lineup because I mean you got eight guys there that can play.
Yeah, for sure. It's gonna be interesting. I'm excited. I think we can do some serious damage. I mean, I think like off like some like UTR list, we're like four or something or five.
Yeah.
So
yeah, that's about right. You guys should be top five next year, and I think
as a coach, that's called a good problem to have, right? You're not looking. You're looking at, man, I got all these good players. Who am I going to sit out? That's a whole lot better than, gosh, I need to find somebody to put in.
yeah.
So that's good stuff.
Excellent. And so, what are your plans for the rest of the summer and fall? Are you going to be in Lexington? Or are you going to be still training in Florida? Or how's it going to work?
Yeah. I'm taking the fall off this year. Yeah, just to play full time. I'm going to play a lot of futures, play a lot of pro tournaments. You know, trying to get a lot of ATP points, get my ranking up a little bit. I'll be spending a lot of time in Florida, where I practice. That's the plan.
And where do you train in Florida?
In Delray Beach at Pro World Tennis Academy.
Yeah, cool. So tell me this, is as you were younger and you were training in the academy and you were moving along in the academy, did you ever have any setbacks from an injury perspective where you had to take some time off and you kind of felt like, man, I'm getting behind? Or did that ever happen?
When I was 13, I was really into scootering and I was at the skate park and I busted open my knee. I had, I think, like 24 stitches. I like fell on a half pipe, and I was out. I wasn't out for that long, actually. Like the stitches were in there for about 3 weeks. But I had to keep my leg straight for the whole time, because if I would have bent my knee, the stitches would have popped out. So that took some time to get some range of motion again going on, and walking normally, running normally. So that was a little bit of a setback. But I remember like my next tournament after that injury, I made quarterfinals of under 14 nationals, first year under 14. So that was a good result. So that didn't really faze me, but that was a little bit of a setback, and that really sucked. I was hitting balls off a chair for like a month. That was miserable. and also I had a stress fracture in my left foot, when I was 16. That was probably my biggest setback. I'm remembering stuff now that I'm thinking of it. That was a little bit of a setback. I was out for probably like 2 months, something like that. And then I played Eddie Herr in Orange Bowl. I came back for that and I didn't play so good. I had a couple of bad losses there. But I'm really competitive. So even if I was playing crappy and I was, a little rusty, like I feel like I would always still find ways to win almost. So,
sure.
I'm not the type of guy to like really have that bad of a loss, because like I'm just so competitive. I don't really check out mentally or something like that. But also too, freshman year, I was super sick. I struggled with mono for like 5-6 months. That was horrible. That was a big challenge for me. That's when I was probably like at the lowest kind of point. I was like, oh, this is really like taking effect on my tennis. I hit 5 minutes through the middle and I'm exhausted. It was almost like, how am I even like, going to get through this? It was just like struggle, trying to string like a couple of weeks of practice together without getting sick. And it almost felt impossible, to be honest. And I was like, I wonder if I'm even going to get it back. Like, mono is, it can last a really long time. So I was super stressed out. I really wanted my health back. And then once I did get it back, it made me enjoy tennis actually a lot more. And I was just happy to be healthy and happy to play tennis, with no injuries or no problems. So, looking back on it, it could be, everything happens for a reason. I think it might have helped me, refound some joy in the game, but that was tough too. I struggled my freshman fall and part of the season. I took actually a lot of matches off of my first season. I only played probably like 40-50% of the time.
Yeah. And I think one of the things that's hard for kids is they think, if I'm out with an injury or I'm out with mono, I'm losing ground on everybody else. But, mm-hmm. Watching the Olympics, it was so interesting to see all these players who would have a catastrophic injury. They might be out for an entire year. And when they came back with a few months of training, they were just as good as they ever were. Right. Mm-hmm. And so talent is talent. Yeah. I mean, you're a good player. You're a good player. When you get healthy, you come back, you're going to be fine. Right. Is that kind of the experience you had?
Yeah. Yeah. And for sure. Some players can be injured for 6 months and they can come back and play really well, but other players are injured for 6 months and they have to struggle for a couple of tournaments before they find their rhythm again. It's all what you are as, an individual. Everyone progresses at their own rate. Everyone, exceeds at their own rate. So it's just personal, feelings. I just kept telling myself, like, just gotta do what I can control. Just have to work on things that don't require energy. I was trying to like stretch a lot and eat pretty healthy, really healthy. So just trying to gain some ground where I could, with the circumstances, and just trying to make the most out of it. I'd say when I was struggling with mono, just trying to make the most out of it and trying to find little things you can improve on, even in your crappy situation.
talk real quick about equipment as a young kid. Were you engaged with the equipment you were using, or did your dad basically say, here's the racket you're going to use, and that's the one you use? How much did that matter to you? Do you remember moving up in weights of rackets and going to poly string and all that kind of stuff?
Yeah. Super relaxed on equipment. My dad, he's a big Wilson guy. So I was just using Wilson from a young age, but you know, part of strings or any of that, I was super, super chill. My dad would just throw in whatever string, and I would just play with it, to be honest. So,
gotcha.
And I think like just growing up like that, it's probably turned out well, because now, like, you know, some players are super picky on their weight of their racket or tension of their strings. And, you know, I don't, you know, if the strings are a little too loose or tight, like I could care less, really. I don't think it really bothers me, because I've had such a, you know, wide strings and rackets. So I'm pretty relaxed.
Gotcha. And you switched to the Pure Aero mid season, right?
Yeah. This just describes it. Yeah. I just wasn't liking the Ultra anymore. And I was like, I'm just going to switch to the Aero. I know I like it. So just going to go for it.
Go ahead, Scott.
No, I was just going to say, you know, I was at the match and Yuri was there, and Yuri's like, what's he doing with that racket? When did he do this? And so it was funny. We noticed that when you did that.
Mm-hmm. So did you experience any issues? I know a lot of players, Haley Carter, when we interviewed her, she said every time she would make an equipment change, she would have some type of little nagging injury for a while. Did you notice that at all? Or did you just switch and no problem?
Switch and no problem.
I like it.
I switched, and then I was like, okay, like I can hit the ball well, but let me try to play some matches, practice matches with the guys. And I played a 3 out of 5 match with Gab, and I lost, I think it was 19-17 in the fifth. Wow. But I mean, I played well. It was a high level match. So, I mean, I was playing well, hitting wise and in points and in matches. So, and also I actually used the Aero like a couple summers ago in some UTR matches in Saddlebrook. Sometimes I would just break all my strings and I'd use my friend's rackets, and they're actually an Aero, and I actually beat some pretty good players with the Aero. Okay. So I liked it, and I was pretty comfortable with it. So it was no problem to switch.
Yeah. Well, how long did that 19-17 match last?
Well, I think we played the first 4 sets one day, and then we finished the 5th set the other day.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah.
Makes sense.
Little John Isner Wimbledon thing going on there.
Yeah.
I like it. Hey, we're getting towards the end of our hour, so maybe just a few questions to wrap up. But before we get there, but you know, I noticed you're wearing the shirt you're wearing is Ionic.
Yeah.
And I noticed that, what's his name? Pospisil is wearing the same shirt tonight, or the same brand. Mm-hmm. Is that a Canadian brand, or tell us?
Yeah,
tell
it's
us
a Canadian, Canadian brand. They're from Montreal. Mm-hmm. They've helped me out a lot. I've been wearing Ionic since I was about 14 years old, mm-hmm. you know, and they do clothes, just clothes. And it's great. It's Canadian. Love repping something Canadian. And it's, it's pretty simple. It's nothing too crazy. Yeah, I like it. It's free clothes.
Good stuff.
No problem with the new NIL rules, I guess.
Yeah, exactly.
sort of the fast feed, I guess, is what we call it. But what are some habits that you've picked up from Cedric and Matt that you've incorporated into your, you know, daily routines?
Well, I was always a hard worker, but I think they forced me to work hard, but also, you know, work smarter, work on, you know, little technical things, or work on, you know, really specific things in my game. I think Cedric's really good with that. He works on, you know, little things in my game, you know, that can translate to the next level, that can, you know, to make me be, you know, be a top 100 player, you know, playing, you know, a little more aggressive, standing closer to the baseline, you know, simple drills and little things to help with my game and help it transition into the way, you know, I want it to go in the future. So I'd say that, you know, working, you know, smarter and working a little more specifically on little aspects of my game.
A little more focused. And I like it.
Yeah.
What is something that Lexington needs that you have in Toronto? So what does something that from Toronto
Tim Hortons.
Need? Tim Hortons.
What is that?
Tim Hortons.
Tim Hortons. It's a coffee shop and donut shop. Right?
It's like a way better version of Dunkin' Donuts.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Then I would say yes, they do need that.
Yeah.
And what does Toronto need that Lexington has?
Local taco. That restaurant's amazing. That's my favorite restaurant in Lexington.
All right. So we're 100% on this answer. What is your go-to restaurant when you're on the road? 100%. Every player's answered the same. Are you going to do this? Are you going
to? Okay. No. I know probably what a lot of people are going to say, so I'm not going to say it.
Hold on. So what do you think they all say?
Chipotle?
100%. 100%. Yeah.
Okay. I mean, Chipotle is one of my favorites. It's fast and it's pretty healthy, but I also like eating sushi and poke bowls. So
okay.
Just what type of restaurant that sells that. I enjoy that a lot too.
Good. All right. And so let me ask you this one. What's something, and Scott may have been about to ask this, what's something you believe to be true that everyone thinks you're crazy about? They think you're crazy, but you believe it to be true.
I mean, probably just being yourself. I mean, I just be myself out there, you know, with me getting pumped up like that, you know, being really loud like that, you know, I rub people off the wrong way and that's just how it's going to be. But, you know, that's myself. I mean, it's nothing personal. It's just something that's inside of me and something that just comes naturally to me. So, you know, some people probably do think I'm a little crazy if they just watch me play a tennis match.
Yeah.
So I'd say that's probably it.
Yeah. Well, just know we're not two of them. We love it.
Okay. We love it. It's great. Keep it up. And last one, what advice would you give to a junior tennis player who's, like, say, 14, 15 years old, may not be number one in Canada or the U.S., but they aspire to be a college tennis player and maybe even go further than that. But what would you tell that player at 14 or 15?
That's a good question. I'd probably just tell them to be the hardest worker, outwork everyone around you.
Mm-hmm.
That's the most important thing, you know, being disciplined, working hard, you know, be coachable. You know, listen to what your coach says, listen to what, your parents say. And yeah, I just think, the hard work, it really comes a long way. If you really work hard from a long age, a young age, that, you know, you'll catch up to people, you'll gain ground on people, you'll improve way faster than other people. Because, you know, if you're 14, 15, you have so much time, you know, even when you're in college, you know, you can play 20, 21, 22, you got like 5-6 years to still be in college. You still got so much time. You still have so much hours on the practice court, to do and to train hard. So I just think, you know, the work you put in on the court or, you know, in the weight room or whether it's fitness, mental or just tennis, I think that's the biggest part. You got to outwork everyone.
Yeah, I think that's great advice.
I like it a lot.
Yeah, I was having that same discussion with my son. You know, he's up and down on he'll have good results and then not results he wants. And I just explained, keep your nose to the grindstone, man. Just keep working. Mm-hmm. And I talked to him, this world rewards those who work hard, right? So just keep working hard and see what happens.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. That's good advice.
Well, Liam, will you be in Cincinnati or are you going to be after Toronto? Okay.
No, not in Cincinnati. Going back to Florida. And then I'm just going to figure something out, trying to play futures somewhere.
Right, good. Well, we'll keep watching your progress on the futures and looking forward to seeing you play for Kentucky next spring.
All this right. was a lot of fun. Sounds, yeah. A lot of fun. Appreciate you being on.
All right. Thanks,
all right.
All right. Take care.
Thank you.
All right. Bye.